When Luke tells us about the arrival of John the Baptist onto the scene in chapter 3 of his gospel, he quotes not only from Isaiah, but also from Malachi, and he quotes two passages that are about geographical preparation for people returning to Jerusalem. It's very, very specific, space specific. The Jewish people had been exiled from their homeland by a brutal government of Babylon, modern day Iraq, and they had been taken out of their homeland and were resettled all around. And the people hoped, longed for a day when they would all be able to return free across the desert. And they were looking for this geographical preparation. That's what the texts in Isaiah and Malachi are all about. The people coming back to Jerusalem, making the long trek, all the people who've been dispersed all over the world, coming back in freedom and in joy to the temple of God. So that's their hope. That's what Malachi is prophesying about on a very base level, on a very simple level. And it was also liturgical. It was also something that they hoped they would be able to worship in freedom. The Babylonians had different gods than the Jews did, and the Babylonians didn't like the Jews worshiping their God, and the Jews were hoping to come home and to worship again in the temple. It's even mentioned in Malachi about worshiping freely in the temple of God. And the geography we know from archaeology of the temple in Jerusalem was they would sing songs as they came up these massive stairs and enter into the temple. So it was sort of like an unveiling kind of thing. You couldn't see the top of the temple when you were at the bottom of the stairs, at the bottom of the hill. And as you got higher and higher, eventually it would reveal itself. It's sort of like when you come through the Fort Pitt tunnels and you can't see anything, and then all of a sudden there's this great big cityscape all of a sudden, and it's massive and beautiful, and it's a great introduction to the city of Pittsburgh. Same idea. You couldn't see the top of the temple. You couldn't see where you were going, and you would be singing songs, and when you got to the top, there would be this great dynamic joy of entering in to worship God. I remember 25 years ago, when I was worshiping, I got to do this. This was so cool. On All Saints Sunday, I got to worship in Westminster Abbey in London. And that was just a really neat experience. That was really amazing. And it occurred to me how this procession to the temple might have happened. Because what happened was we arrived and the place was already 3/4 full and the church hadn't started yet. The service hadn't started. And so we sat, I think we were in the very last row, and Westminster Abbey is huge. You couldn't even see the front of the church from the back where we were sitting. And I said to the people around us, I said, why is it so full and everything? Well, this is All Saints Day. The royal family's coming. So we got to sit there, and I was on an aisle seat on the left-hand side of the church, and in the very last row. And the royal family walked in and came in. Now, when they talk about the royal family, there's quite a bit of people to the royal family. They must have had second cousins and third cousins and somebody's stepbrother and that kind of stuff. They brought in, I don't know, it seemed like 100 people or 150 people who all walked down the main aisle. And then at the end, then came Prince Charles. And then at the end came all the important people. But you know what it was like. And they sat up in front. They sat up here where the choir would sit. And all the rest of us, we sat way in the back, and I couldn't even see. The people were so tiny, so far away. But they made a big to-do about making way for the queen and her family to come down and sit up in the front, up in the choir, on All Saints Day in Westminster Abbey. And I thought that's probably what they did when they were in Jerusalem. They made a big deal out of coming and entering into God's house and God's presence, going up those stairs and entering into the temple. And they're hoping that they could do this again. They're hoping, they're praying with all their might that someday they can gather in freedom and that they can be part of that train, that parade of people, of the royal family coming into the temple. Then fast forward a couple hundred years from the time of Malachi and Isaiah, and you get John the Baptist talking about a similar thing, about homecoming. John the Baptist, though, talks about it in such a different way from Malachi and from Isaiah. John the Baptist is sort of like the flash crash. You know what I mean about a flash crash? That's when all of a sudden, you know, the stock market's just going and going and going, and then all of a sudden it just drops off a cliff, and there's a big drop in stock prices in one day or a couple of hours. That's what John the Baptist does. The people are all at home. The people are all in the promised land. They're in Israel. Yet John the Baptist comes and says, I'm that messenger who is looking for that better home, that next home. He's talking about the heavenly home, certainly, but he's also talking about being at home with Jesus, learning about Jesus. He says, I'm not the important one. Jesus is the important one. Don't pay attention to me. Pay attention to Jesus. So all this stuff you've built up in your life, if it doesn't amount to Jesus, push it aside. And that's why he's a flash crash, because people in the temple were saying things like, here's how we come home, here are the things we must do, here are the things that are important for us to do as Jews, here's the Ten Commandments we must follow, here are all the rules and regulations. And John the Baptist spoke to people's need. He didn't speak to their duty. He didn't speak to their sense of obligation. He didn't make them have to pass through a bunch of hoops first. Instead, he said, there's one coming, and he's going to make you feel at home. He talks to people where they are, John the Baptist does. He knows that the people who are coming to him are people who have not had their needs met in other places. They're in pain. They've suffered. Maybe they live in the promised land, but they're still homeless. Maybe they've come back and they found, like so many refugees in the world today, they've come back and found that if you don't have a record, if you don't have some sort of proof that that's your land, how are you going to kick off somebody who's moved in? Imagine that. You've been taken to Babylon, and you come back to the promised land a generation later, and you find out that what was your land for thousands of years, what was your family's land for thousands of years, somebody else is on it. That happened to several of my acquaintances. I won't call them friends because I didn't exactly know them, but it happened to several of the acquaintances in the Philippines when the Hurricane Haiyan went through a couple years ago. How do you prove that it was your land that you were on for thousands of years without any deed, without any piece of paper that says you bought this? And they found that trying to figure out who belongs there is nearly impossible because everybody lays claim to different pieces. So the question that John the Baptist says is, how are you going to come home? How are you going to come home? What are you going to receive? How are you going to get people home? John the Baptist asks us that in Advent. How are you going to help people get home? Now, on one level, we could say, well, it's easy. You know, you take somebody to the airport, and then you say goodbye, and then they go and fly over, and then they're home. So that's good. I got to go to the airport over the Thanksgiving holidays, and that was nice to see people going home, see the smiling faces of people who were returning home. But are you going to put somebody on a taxi? Or are you going to take somebody and put them on a Greyhound bus in downtown Pittsburgh? But what about somebody who just feels not at home because they're depressed? What about somebody who is not at home because they just can't get it together? They've got personal problems. How are we going to get them home? The United Church of Christ just recently responded. There was a terrible flood in India just in the last couple of days. There has been a terrible storm there. And the United Church of Christ has already, because we have partners on the ground, has already responded by starting to resettle people and provide them with clean water and medicines and things that have been washed out from the floods. I think that might be part of what John the Baptist meant by helping people get home. If you're a parent and you've ever had teenagers in the house, you know about worrying about somebody getting home. If you're a parent, you know what it's like to spend a late night waiting for them to come home or waiting for that call. And the kids always say, I know I did it when I was a teenager, oh yeah, sure, I'll call and let you know where I am. And it always seems to be, well, a day late and a dollar short, right? It's never good enough. You know that anxiety that John the Baptist might have had for his people.
wanting to get them home.
What does it take to get people home? You and I, through the noisy collection, I mean, this is amazing to me, through the noisy collection and a little bit extra. The noisy collection is the collection that we take from the kids' ministry, and it's coins mostly, and we take it to the bank, and then we get, I don't know, maybe $70, $80 a time. That's on a really good Sunday. Sometimes we'll get a little less than that. But through the noisy collection and through a little bit extra that people donated, we were able to put a woman through seminary and get her Master's of Divinity in the Philippines. That's the coolest thing in the world. When I was there, I think about 4 or 5 people out of a group of 30 pastors had a Master of Divinity degree. They don't do their education the same way we do. They can't afford it. They can't go to seminary. So they nurture people from the bottom up. You learn from somebody who's already doing it, and maybe you don't go to school. But this woman wanted to do this really bad, and she said, I don't know where I'm going to get the money from. I don't know where I'm going to be able to do it. And to her, it was a huge amount because of the difference in currency. Yet she sent me, 2 weeks ago, she sent me pictures of her final project and the front page of the final project. And she's going to graduate with a Master's of Divinity. Emmanuel Church, Little Emmanuel Church, 3618 Hills Church Road, helped to send somebody to seminary and fulfill her lifelong dream. That's pretty incredible. That's pretty amazing. Every time we pray to Jesus, every time we share a hug or cry a tear with somebody, we are helping people get that much closer to home. Whether it's a literal home or a metaphysical home or a spiritual home, however you want to think about it. And that's what John the Baptist wants us to do. Help your neighbor get home to that sense of comfort. The word home is so important. That sense of comfort. And satisfaction, getting home. Little Timmy came to his house after going out shopping the one day with his mother. Leo Buscaglia tells this story. And he came home after grocery shopping with his mother, and he happened to notice that the gentleman across the street was sitting on his front porch. And the mother knew that this man had been married for many, many years and had just lost his wife. And the man was just sitting on the front porch looking out at the street in a daze. And little Timmy was maybe 6 or 7 years old. And Timmy had been around the house a lot. Timmy had helped the gentleman rake leaves. Timmy had gone over and they had shared cookies and milk together. The woman had given Timmy candy and things. So he was pretty familiar with the family. And Timmy says to his mother as they came home from shopping, he says, I'd like to go over and visit with Mr. Johnson for a little while. Is that okay, Mom? And she said, sure. It wasn't usually a very long visit. And she watched him cross the street. She watched him sit on the chair on the porch with Mr. Johnson. And they sat there for a very, very, very long time. And Timmy's mom looked across the street and she kept looking, and they just were still sitting there each time, every time she looked out to check on him. And they just kept sitting there, the two of them, Mr. Johnson and Timmy. And after about an hour, which was an extraordinarily long time for Timmy to visit Mr. Johnson, Timmy comes back across the street and comes inside and starts playing with his toys and everything. And his mother says, did you have a good visit with Mr. Johnson? Timmy says, yes, Mom, I did. She said, you were over there for an awful long time. What did you talk about? And Timmy said, we didn't talk about anything. I was helping him cry. That's helping somebody get home. Taking somebody's hand and helping them get home. That's what John the Baptist wants from us. Prepare the way of the Lord, because Jesus is coming and he's going to help us get home. Amen.